cause I'm eager, young and qualified. Yeah, I'm eager, young and starry-eyed. All the big
welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sleepy Sebastian.
Sleepy Sebastian.
Well, it's all this because Eastern Canada is on the edge of a tropical storm. So there's all like high pressure, low pressure. The weather's all over the place. And a lot of people get tired when the air pressure is all over the place. I woke up this morning, it was 15 degrees. And I don't know if you know this about me, but I open my windows in the spring and don't close them until the fall. So whatever temperature it is, that's what it is. And I just woke up freezing. It was great. It was glorious.
We are here to talk about gay news. And there's certainly been a little bit of gay news causing some of a ruckus across Canada. Now, normally we start with our Canadian stories. We have a whole bunch of them lined up after the break. We'll get into that in our second segment a little later in the show. But I wanted to share that I've been keeping an eye on a couple of documentary things that are coming out. In particular, listening to the podcast documentary, which we're very excited about. We're working on ironing out some dates on getting a new guest speaker in. We're talking about multiple episodes. Yeah, we're just working on getting the dates lined up, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, with Shondon, the incredible talent behind Queer Legends, an oral history podcast, and specifically their season two, talking about the true story of Canada's LGBT purge, including never-known-before facts being revealed through documentary evidence being released by the LGBT Purge. There we go. Fund and secretariat that's working on that. So we are excited about it. It is heartbreaking.
Reading about some of the newly released details is kind of
it's juicy.
Yeah, juicy is a good way of putting it, yeah.
Exactly. I also am excited about a documentary that's been called Sinister, and it's the new Tegan and Sarah documentary called Fanatical, The Catfishing of Tegan and Sarah. Less about their incredible body of musical talent and work, and more about an incredibly intense, like decades-long catfishing, ID theft. We're talking like incredible amount of criminality that has gone into the story, where Tegan and Sarah were the victims of that. So yeah, we're excited to see that one when it comes out as well.
There's a lot of Canadian artists like that. Like hearing the personal struggles of Celine Dion is almost more interesting than her music career. And actually Jan Arden as well. When you read about Jan Arden, she went through some stuff in her personal life. Like, yeah, there's quite a few musicians, you know, Shania Twain, 3 platinum records in a row, basically unheard of in the music industry. Not half as interesting as her personal life. I really do find that there's a lot of artists like that, especially in Canada, where it's like, you know, they come from small village northern Manitoba that no one's ever heard of, and then they become a billionaire. And the story is more interesting than the music. It's a pretty common thing. So yeah, I have no doubt that Tegan and Sarah's story is more interesting than watching a documentary about their music, as much as I like their music.
But before we dive into our Canadian Pride stories, which have, there's good news, there's less stellar news, and really in that pro-Palestinian debate has played out very interestingly over the last week across both Ottawa and Montreal. But before we get into that, I wanted to talk about the Olympics. Now, the Summer Games, that I'll be keeping an eye out on the Paralympics as well, as that continues to unfold. Mm-hmm. Very excited to see the great world of sport continuing on. We've been watching the odd game here and there whilst playing some video games in the background. But OutSports has done this pretty cool thing where, for example, there is the refugee team. You must be familiar with the Olympic refugee team.
Yes. When I first heard, I think this is the second time or third time. It's a fairly modern phenomenon. But yeah, people who are essentially stateless.
First Olympic medal for the refugee team just got one as well, which is truly incredible achievement. But one of the things I was mentioning earlier about OutSports is they consider, imagine if all of the lesbian, gay, and trans, and I will correct earlier, I mentioned that there was no, there was one openly trans person. There's actually a couple of others, non-binary folks in the Olympics, but none of whom are on medication for the purpose of, which we mentioned last week as well. But imagine that all the gay athletes were on their own team.
Okay.
As if they were their own country. Mm-hmm. According to OutSports, they would have finished seventh place, just behind Japan. It is an even greater medal count than last year. It truly incredible wins. There are 186 publicly out LGBT athletes in the Olympics this past year. Now 33 medals have been won. They would have finished 10th overall, 10th to 11th. It depends on how you count the medals. I think there's like points based on silver, gold, and bronze. But 10th to 11th is where all the gays would have ended up. Now this is incredible. This is a huge increase over the last Olympics in terms of number of openly queer athletes competing, in terms of the number of gold medal wins that we saw. It was everything in basketball, volleyball, track and field, sailing. The Austrian team, Laura Vadlow, if Austrian sailing won it. Kelly Harrington in boxing for Ireland also won openly queer. It's all over the place. Now, for Canada, our Canadian medal win would have been Olivia Epp, Sophie Degaud, and Maddie Grant of the Rugby Sevens. So
there's a time before, I don't know, was it the 80s or something, before I was born, where the Winter and the Summer Olympics happened in the same year, and it was just a flood. And then somebody came up with the brilliant idea of staggering it every 2 years, because we're going to wait 2 years before we get flooded with slalom and curling and hockey. And
they lost to New Zealand, but it was the gold match game. And New Zealand took the gold in the Rugby Sevens. Absolutely incredible. The fact that they came silver to the All Blacks is a truly incredible achievement. And most importantly, beat the Americans, who came in third. So that's a key highlight. As I mentioned about our medal-winning Rugby Seven Women's, truly great, great job. And of course, I mentioned earlier, I referenced Cindy Nagama's historic win in boxing, where the Cindy took the gold medal as well. So it's truly a historic moment for queer folks all over the place. In other news, Imane Khelif, who was also in boxing, then at the center of a lot of that gender controversy.
Yeah.
A lot of people claiming that she was a trans man. Notable critics include J.K. Rowling and Donald Trump himself. Imane has now filed a legal complaint in Paris over that debacle. So we'll see where that goes. And I was devastated to learn that Tom Daley has indicated that he is retiring from diving. So, but in honesty, the number of medals he's won and the way that he has brought Olympic diving to the world is truly incredible. So great work on that one.
And it's rare for people to be Olympic level athletes past the age of 25. Like there are a few people who get medals into their 40s, but it depends on the sport. It depends on the athleticism. It depends on if it's individual or team. Like, you do get the occasional person who is a little bit, I mean, it's weird to refer to somebody over the age of 25 as being older, but in the world of sport, that can be true. So yeah, it's not a real surprise that he's stepping back from the diving board, I guess you could say.
Exactly. Yeah. But we have run out of time for our first segment. We're going to play, ironically, this was unplanned, but this is Shame Spiral by Jess Waters, great indie pop crack, and out of Vancouver, BC. And we will be back just after this. Your home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
My name is Sebastian.
And let's start off with some nice news. We earlier before the break, we talked about the Olympics and bodies and all of that jazz. But now I want to talk to some people who had a great time I always want to stress when there's a pride event, a gay thing, and people just generally had a great time. And that's the folks who walked, drove, and according to the CBC, rollerbladed through White Horse Pride in the Yukon. This was the 11th Pride event happening in the Yukon, in specifically White Horse. Yeah, they kind of marched around. There was, I think the film festival had some stuff going on. All in all, just everyone had a great time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also saw pictures from Iqaluit Pride. And when I was looking at the pictures, all I could think is, whoa, that really is the tundra, isn't it? But yeah, it's same general story. People showed up. They generally had a good time. The turnout, it's complicated because when you're talking about the north, you know, the territories part of Canada, you get a couple hundred people showing out, and that's a really good show out for Pride in a place with absolutely no population density. So you see, you know, 200 people showed up and you're like, is that good? Is that bad? I don't know. So you Google the population of the region and you're like, okay, yeah, that's pretty good, all things considered. So yeah.
I mean, I've been to White Horse, and it's not a big, I mean, city. I'm going to say city here with ample pause. But it's not huge. But yeah. And you're right, it is sort of spread out. So yeah, seeing that, it's great. I think it's always good for us to celebrate good news. Mm-hmm. I also wanted to mention about how Halifax Pride has won the bid for Canada Pride. Mm-hmm. So for those who aren't familiar, every couple of years, there is obviously World Pride, which I'm going to quickly Google and figure out where that's going to be. But Canada Pride moves around the country. It's every couple of years. Typically, the big thing that anchors the Canada Pride most recently anyway has been the Human Rights Forum that happens as part of that event. I believe this year it was in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And they held... their Canada Pride celebrations as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. As I mentioned earlier, World Pride will be taking place, and I think it's going to be Washington, D.C. in 2025, and then in 2026, it is moving to Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Folks may recall that 2024, it was in Toronto. It was the fourth iteration of World Pride. Absolutely massive. Yes. That's when there were 1 million people participating in a city of 3 million people. Truly shocking. Now, Canada Pride doesn't have quite the same big draw. But generally speaking, it's what they do for their local pride at a bigger scale. And Halifax has won the bid for 2027. And they're planning to yet again have a pride event, but sort of scale it all up. The CBC notes that last year, of course, there was no pride in Halifax. A number of issues led to the event not happening, which we've discussed in the past.
Yeah, and back in the spring, I remember there was a moment of panic when they were unsure if they could even have pride this year as well. And then that was resolved pretty swiftly. Halifax has had a bit of a roller coaster over the past few years with regards to its pride festival. It's pretty interesting. Although I do like the idea of like a national level capital pride with a seafood theme.
Yes, just all the lobsters and the dulse and just, oh, it's going to be great. Halifax Pride. Big celebration out in Nova Scotia. I think I will be planning my 2027 vacation in Nova Scotia. What a great way to celebrate the summer.
I'm yet to go to the East Coast. I really should make my way out there.
It is a beautiful, beautiful part of Canada. Let's pivot now to another really recent pride that happened, and that is Montreal Pride.
Ooh.
Now, both Montreal Pride and Capital Pride, Fierté Canada Pride, Capital Pride in Ottawa, it's a French version of the name. I always get them mixed up with FCP. But they released a statement, and the two stand quite starkly in contrast. But before we get into that, Sebastian, what happened in Montreal Pride?
Oh, many things happened in Montreal Pride. Multiple things happened in Montreal Pride. So there was a protest happening on the Saturday night that I actually know somebody who lives a block away from there, and he had heard about it because all of a sudden all the music died down, and then he heard some yelling. But yeah, there were protests on the Saturday night before the parade in the sort of Papineau Avenue region, where there were windows smashed in, and there was arrests, and there was tear gas deployed. And it was all from a group named Radical Pride, or Rad Pride.
The pink block that held the Radical Pride. So they're an organization, it's called Pink Block, and they hosted the Rad Pride.
I think my brain's turning off. But yeah, so it was, I'm not getting much detail here about what they were protesting for or against. Sometimes it gets lost.
Well, their biggest critiques were around, essentially, it's your sort of go-to criticisms of pride, pinkwashing, i.e. major corporations. In this particular case, they most took ire with TD Bank. They've been connected to arms manufacturers and the war by Israel on Palestine. So very much against companies that are in arms manufacturing,
TD Bank is not in arms manufacturing. It's one of their investment portfolios.
Yeah, so it just partly owns arms manufacturing.
Yeah.
It's fine. They didn't make the weapons. They just own a bit of it. Anyway, so it's corporate participation in Pride, sort of very much like an anti-capitalist sort of approach, as well as police participation in Pride. That's always a really big one. But yeah, no cops at Pride, no Pride and genocide, which obviously refers to the Arab-Israeli war that's happening right now. But yeah, there was tear gas used, two people were arrested, and police are investigating shop windows being broken on St. Catherine Street. And that was even before the Pride parade began, because that was on...
From my friend who lived a block away from there, he said that the riot police started... showing up. Well, I mean, there's police on the ground keeping an eye on things around sunset, and then the riot police showed up not far after when they realized that there was groups forming. So, I mean, they're kind of, I don't know if it is that feedback thing, because you can have a thing where a protest turns into a riot when the riot police show up, and that it would have just been a protest if the riot police never showed up. So it's hard to say, because they were pretty firmly anti long list of specific corporations. So I don't necessarily think that it would have been flaming garbage cans being thrown through windows if the police didn't show up. But it's hard to say what would have happened otherwise. But yeah, there is that issue of police presence. And if you are protesting against police presence, then the police showing up may inevitably lead to arrests just because of... I mean, I'm sure our listeners are perfectly capable of understanding the relationship between the two.
Exactly. Yeah, it went about exactly as you would expect.
Yeah.
But then moving forward to Montreal Pride on Sunday.
The parade, yeah.
Yeah, and then the more disruptions happened there. Can you tell me a little bit about how that went?
Well, the main thing... I mean, there's a lot of things that happened, but the one that really jumped out at me, that really upset me, there was a pre-planned announced moment of silence that would be happening halfway through the parade, where the parade would stop, all the music would turn off, moment of silence. Pride parades have been doing this for well over a decade, at least, probably a couple decades, in memory of those who have passed away from HIV. And... there was a protest group that took that moment of silence as an opportunity to turn on their megaphones and start protesting, protesting the corporate relationship between Pride sponsors and the war in Palestine. And there were you know, anti-genocide groups, pro-Palestine groups, some of them, some individual people chanting against Israel specifically. I mean, it's a crowd. You're not going to control the message completely. You're going to have wild cards. Mm-hmm. But it was that specific thing that a lot of people are reacting to, the fact that they took the moment of silence as an opportunity. And that's incredibly disrespectful.
I mean, the pride participants, the whole length of the parade, it's always a very powerful moment when the moment of silence happens at a pride parade. You know, we are thinking about the generation that got lost to the HIV/AIDS epidemic, folks who have died from violent homophobic attacks in our communities. So you're right, absolutely despicable decision to choose that moment. What they ended up playing on the loudspeakers that you mentioned there before was recordings of fighter planes, and they were lying on the ground with red paint on their chest. They essentially held a die-in as part of this particular moment. Yeah, I think that definitely does a disservice to the memory of those who, especially in a moment of silence, you don't mess with that. Like, it's dishonorable to do so.
I've seen people starting to compare a lot of these organizations to the Just Stop Oil protests, where people are like, I agree with you about environmentalism, our overdependence on crude oil and plastics, but what does Stonehenge have to do with this? So there is that kind of, you know, there is such a thing as things that are sacred, and you can protest at Pride. I mean, Pride is a protest. There are groups within Pride, within the parade, who are protesting other groups that are within the parade. That has happened many times before, and it will continue to happen. But the moment of silence is supposed to be a sacred moment, and that does feel like a violation. So there are people, just like, I don't know, like a Van Gogh and Stonehenge are, you know, sacred. There's a million things you could have protested, but why those? What does that have to do with anything?
Yeah, so definitely a poor, poor decision by that. Now, there were other groups, according to CBC coverage of it, Helem, Mabdbarat, and the Sapphic Social Club have all implored Montreal Pride to take a public pro-Palestinian stance and to sever their relationship with TD. As we mentioned earlier, TD holds investments in weapons manufacturing companies. Didn't happen.
Yep.
There was, in effect, the Pink Bloc, again, the same faction that intervened on Saturday. They were the ones behind the protest on Sunday, where they effectively held up the parade for about an hour or two. What I thought was really interesting about how Montreal applied to this. Now, in Toronto, they ended up cancelling the tail end of the parade to sort of take the wind out of the sails of the pro-Palestinian group that protested.
That was alarming, yeah. I was shocked when they looked at that.
Others have worked around it. And what seems to have been the case here in Montreal is the police kind of essentially created a ring around the protesters. And then the parade just went around them like an overly sized pothole, for which Montreal would be familiar. Mm-hmm. They just, honestly, if they'd have rolled out some traffic cones, it would have been very on brand.
Oh, that would have been hilarious.
But they essentially just went around the protesters. Yeah.
And to be fair, to all the different festivals in Canada, the contracts that Pride festivals do with major sponsors such as TD Bank were probably signed back in November, December. And even if they wanted to break them, a lot of these contracts are made by, well, they're written by the kind of lawyers that a bank could afford. So these are very good contracts. It would be very bad optics for TD to sue a Pride festival into oblivion. But if they broke those contracts, they would be in a legal position where they could do so. And I think a lot of these festivals are sort of not necessarily siding with TD, but more siding with, let's just be quiet about this and then maybe just not renew next year. But then you also can't violate the contract by saying we're not going to renew next year while the contract is still active. Like, these sponsorship deals, especially when you're dealing with a huge corporation like a bank, it's not easy to violate these things. So I mean, with a little bit of compassion to these festivals. And if I'm willing to bet that half of them are just going to not renew next year. But in terms of this year, protesting has been, just because of the timeline of some of these contracts, it's a little bit, you know, like too little too late, like protesting the day before the parade to withdraw from a TV contract that is a massive sponsorship deal where lawyers were involved. It's just not realistic.
Just to be clear here, there have been, and I mentioned earlier, the various groups that have been working to try and persuade Montreal Pride to drop these corporate sponsors for a while. It wasn't just